I earnestly and urgently ask your prayers on the affiliated communities and others that in time we are sure will join us. Holy See wants to develop the same concept in other difficult countries like, say, France, Holland, Germany, and sad to say, Spain and Italy, that are being hit by the second edition. We are our brothers and sisters' keepers, and our main responsibility as communities, that is, individuals, is to support one another, especially by prayer and sacrifice. Members of the Institute of Religious Life subscribe in writing to its purposes and assist its work actively when possible, as well as morally and spiritually. One of the hardest things we've had to do on occasion is to turn down the request of a community in trouble when they wanted to affiliate. You want to make sure that those who affiliate want to be religious life, live religious life. And of course, we'll be required to ask them to resign if in the judgment of those who know them, they are not living up to the church's expectations. To think we'd have to come to this, but the Holy See has encouraged and more our efforts. Also recommended to members of actions indulged by the Church to encourage personal growth in the perfection of charity. For example, raising your mind to God in humble confidence with a pious invocation or performing a duty or bearing a trial. When I came back from Chicago and my hospital stay, I no sooner entered the door, I was met by one of my fellow Jesuit priests. He asked me, "Have you read the book review in the current issue of America of your dictionary?" "No, I haven't." "Read it and weep. America is published by the Society of Jesus." You offer those things up. Freely abstaining in a spirit of penance from something that in itself is permissible and pleasing. That's where the theology of supernatural merit fits. I don't mean you're going to sit down and ask yourself, "What's the hardest thing in the world that I could do? Or what do I most like to give up and give it up?" No. In all of our lives, and I dare say every day, there are some, at least small means of sacrifice which we are to offer up to God and here for the purposes for which the Institute was founded. Expending yourself or some of your possessions with a kindly heart in the service of someone in need. Let me tell you, there are few people in the world today who are in greater need than religious. Now the publications themselves. What I will do is just briefly refer to the kind of information which Consecrated Life offers. I would like to read to you from the first issue with a commentary to bring you a little bit up to date on what the magazine Consecrated Life is all about. The Holy Father speaks to religious. Among the important documents here was an interview of the cardinal prefect concerning the magisterium of Paul the Sixth in respect to religious life. I've been told by bishops who met the Holy Father, the late Pope, and spoke with him often, that one of the hardest trials of Pope Paul the Sixth was the infidelity of so many of his religious. No wonder he told one bishop friend of mine, when I go to bed, this is Paul the Sixth, I always think of Christ on the cross with his head crowned with thorns. Then documents. Just about every issue of consecrated life tells you about new institutes in the world that have come into existence and have received pontifical approval. It's heartening. It makes you feel that religious life will survive, even though none of your communities will disappear. If it's describing the community, let me just read the names of a few. The Congregation of the Servants of the Blessed Sacrament and of Charity. Another, the Daughters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Another, the Sister Catechists of Jesus Crucified. Another, the Missionary Catechists of St. Teresa of the Child Jesus. Then a secular institute by the name of the Servants of Jesus, the Priest. Then, every issue generally has some decision by the Holy See regarding religious. And some are strange decisions indeed. For example, what is the position of a religious absent from her community? Again, national meetings on the contemplative life. What would you expect the Holy See to tell contemplatives about national meetings on religious life? What would you think? Stay home. Makes sense, doesn't it? Then the very critical issue, the vow of chastity or vow of consecrated celibacy. The Holy See prefers neither. It prefers the vow of consecrated chastity, not celibacy, or not just chastity. The profession of vows during Mass. May I ask, how many of your communities have professional vows during Mass? You are thinking with the Holy See. Then, a long and very difficult document. What rights does a religious have to demand a salary from her institute? And in plain English, in translation, the Holy See says, none, no rights. The problem came up before the Supreme Court of Italy, where religious who had left their communities were suing their institutes for back pay. And finally, a document on what should be in the formula of religious profession. I would like to now briefly address myself to a subject that came up in the second volume of Consecrated Life. And that is the question of married people and the consecrated life. As you know, there are in the Catholic Church both religious institutes and what are called secular institutes. There are other differences, but the single most important difference between a religious and secular institute is that members of a secular institute do not, as such, live a community life. Members of secular institutes take the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. They have a rule of life. And in many ways, they are not unlike religious. But in one way, they are distinctive. And that is that precisely as members of secular institutes, they do not live a community life. There are less than 50,000 members of secular institutes in the Catholic Church, compared to over 1 million religious. Even though secular institutes are over 30 years old, you would think by now we might have more. The main single problem, from what I understand, and I have been counseling members of secular institutes, is precisely what so many religious have given up. They want community life. Well, that's fine. The only problem is, what are they? Are they then religious, or do they belong to a secular institute? A question that was posed to the Holy See was the relationship of married persons and secular institutes. This is especially important for the Institute on Religious Life. And that because, undoubtedly, there are millions of the faithful living in the married state who are very serious about becoming holy. Don't you agree? Millions. The problem which the Church is facing is, in what intelligible sense can they become not precisely religious, because they would not live in community, but could be associated with or members of a community which is called a secular institute. This is good to hear. Let me read a little bit from the Church's teaching, both to enlighten us and maybe help us enlighten those who are interested, either members of our own family or other persons who in time we may have some influence over. The subject here is not definitive by the Holy See. It is rather what they call a consultation, a very formal and long-range study. This is the present state, you might say, of the Holy See's thinking without yet making it legislative. First, chaste celibacy must be absolutely required for members of secular institutes. In other words, to be a full-fledged, bona fide member of a secular institute, the person must have vowed him or herself to a lifetime of chastity. In order to clarify that which can be quite easily misunderstood, the Church declares that this affirmation is based on both the Church's doctrine and her laws. Secular institutes came into existence in 1947. I quote, "Even though from 1947 to our present day, there have been important developments in Catholic doctrine on the laity, particularly as regards marriage, the evangelical distinction between the life of a married person and that of a celibate for the sake of the kingdom has not substantially changed, nor can it change. Furthermore, the widespread crisis concerning priestly celibacy has shown us more clearly and profoundly this value which ranks first among the councils and which has always been held in special honor by the Church." Now, without identifying the secular institutes, there are some that felt they could make a change. The Church's mind is, whatever these people will do, they do not become full-fledged members of an institute of Christian perfection unless they have taken a vow of consecrated chastity. I don't believe, at least in my own reading, and I do a lot of churches documentary literature, I don't believe that anything that has happened, perhaps ever, of the Church's teaching makes it more clear than this, that either you have consecrated chastity or you don't have the state of Christian perfection. All right? Generosity is not enough. Piety is not enough. The desire to serve God in holiness in your state of life is not enough. To have a state of Christian perfection, which both the secular institute and religious life are, there must be, absolutely must be, a vow of chastity. What then is the option? Now, this has to be clarified. The option is, part two, married persons may be members in the broad sense of such institutes within certain prudent limits. What the Church is saying is, and this is so practically important because it's one reason for the Institute on Religious Life coming into existence. Our institute is not the consortium. I am, to this day, Rome's appointee as theological advisor to the consortium. The Institute on Religious Life is very different. And among the differences is, the Holy See does want lay people to become more conscious than ever about perfection, sanctity. And from whom should they better learn this than from religious? Now, as you would expect, not a few cases occur. In my 33 years in the priesthood, it'll be 33 years this June, I have met not a few instances of married people where one or the other partner wanted to live a life of celibacy, of chastity. Listen to this. This is the Holy See's language. The motives of husbands and wives who wish to enter a secular institute must be very carefully weighed. If there appears to be a desire to escape from marriage, or depreciation of the dignity of marriage, the request for entrance should be refused. Again, the Holy See teaches, admission of one spouse requires the consent of the other. And this I found, I suppose it's more often among wives than husbands. My own mother was widowed when I was just a year old. She told me, if you hadn't come along, I'd be a religious today. Well, thanks, Mother. You're stuck. Then when I entered the Jesuit order, she applied for membership to a number of communities. Tell you about the time she applied for the visitation order. And she had an interview up in St. Paul and came back very enthusiastic. I think they will want me, but you've got to write, you must write a letter of recommendation. Whatever I said was all very kind. I know this woman, she's a good person. I guess if I had changed my name, and also I shouldn't have said this, at the very end I said, I should know she's my mother. At any rate, they didn't take her. So she was buried in a Franciscan habit as a Franciscan tertiary. Her, one of her great disappointments, as I've told you people, was, I didn't become a Franciscan. Mother, I told her, the Jesuits are almost as good. Yes, but they're not Franciscan. I'm sharing these things with you. I hope they don't surprise you, because we have a great responsibility to the laity to help them grow in sanctity. And among them, to say the least, unfinished business in religious life in the modern world. One aspect of the religious life that we hardly went into during the past year, we are going into with at least some depth here. If you were to ask the average religious, what are the two purposes of religious life? I think if we knew our grammar, we would say our first purpose is to grow in personal sanctity and union with God, and to work for the salvation and sanctification of our neighbor. In other words, work in the apostolate. Now, where's the second responsibility that I'm not merely afraid, I know many, even otherwise good communities, have neglected? What am I saying? I am saying that the teaching apostolate is not enough. The hospital, or the care of the handicapped, or the aged, is not enough. In order to satisfy my duty as a religious, I am obliged to strive to sanctify my neighbor. That is a built-in imperative of the religious life. And it's not just my own individual effort that I make, but the institute's responsibility. The community has a duty. What the church is doing, and this comes from the Sacred Congregation for Religious and Secular Institutes, the council is over 15 years, or will be, come this December. There does not yet exist in Rome, and I've discussed this with the Holy See more than once, any organized effort under the Holy See for doing what? For sanctifying the laity. You've got commissions and congregations for everything. And as Archbishop Meyer said, this is mainly the duty of religious, or in this case, of secular institutes. Am I clear? In other words, the church is gravely concerned about sanctifying the people of God. The Holy See is examining ways of doing this. Now, what she tells secular institutes, she is also telling religious. This has tremendous potential. And Mother Teresa's dream, before she dies, she's 69. I got a letter from the New York Superior after I was laid up. She said, "Mother and you must be twins." She never stops working. But one of her hopes is to found one more, what shall we call it? She now has, as you know, the Active Apostolic Missionaries of Charity and the Contemplatives. That's two communities for women. Corresponding to for men, four communities she has founded. And I was just talking the other day, because he drove me home, the sisters insisted that he drive me home, without identifying the community. He is leaving it. He's being ordained next year, and he's leaving it to join the Missionaries of Charity, the men's branch. Because, he said, I want to give myself to Christ totally. But one more community she wants to find, or one more organization. What to do with those tens of thousands, millions? You see what we're saying? Of people that we call the laity. But she says it has to be done, and the Holy says it must be done by those who are themselves living lives of Christian perfection. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen.